content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the New York Times and the Washington Post. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, I want to remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we are going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. For weeks now, we have read about how COVID-19 has prompted big changes when it comes to travel. The changes continue to unfold as we move from summer to fall. In the June 24, 2020 issue of the New York Times, writer Elaine Glusek wrote about the new escapism, isolationist travel. As the editors explained, as travelers seek safety amid social distancing, the travel industry is adapting with outdoor trips, remote lodgings, and private camps. Before we begin the article, please keep in mind that some sections of the article are referring to events that took place during the summer of 2020, even though they are written in the present tense. From taking cooking classes in the home of a local to learning traditional crafts from indigenous people, much of travel up until March 2020 was all about connecting with others. Now in the COVID-19 era, travel is fraught with the demands of social distancing and hygiene. As people start thinking about taking trips, either by themselves or with close family or friends, travel companies are pivoting with new offerings and ways to offer distance from the crowd. In pursuit of the great outdoors, pre-pandemic, less than 20% of Americans spent time outdoors more than once a week, according to the Outdoor Industry Association. Since then, adult bike sales have risen 121% nationally. In Vermont, sales of fishing licenses have gone up 50%. In a recent McKinsey survey on how behaviors are changing because of COVID-19, 18% say they are spending more time outdoors, where transmission rates of the virus are believed to be lower. Now even endeavors that seem to mandate a team are offering self-guided options. Rowing the World is introducing self-guided rowing tours for individuals and small groups in Seattle, Washington, Sarasota, Florida, and Michigan and Maine. Llamas help carry the loads on picnic hikes and multi-day treks with Paragon Guides in Vail, Colorado. This summer, the company will continue to offer the guided trips, but those who seek to avoid all human contact can rent a llama and go it alone. By the way, llama rental started at $100 a day, and lunch hikes cost $492 for two people. Camping where no one will find you. It can be hard to get a prime camping spot in summer through the recreation.gov, the reservation website that represents 12 federal agencies managing public land, including the National Park Service, the Bureau of Land Management, and the U.S. Forest Service. The anticipated surge in domestic outdoor travel may only tighten that squeeze. One solution, seek private land. Websites and apps like Hip Camp and Camp Space connect campers with landowners. Getting outside is essential for human and health happiness, and in this current moment in time of stress and anxiety, the outdoors are more important than ever, says Elisa Vivazio, the chief executive of Hip Camp, which manages bookings at more than 300,000 sites in the United States. About a third of the sites have canvas tents, yurts, or treehouses. Hip Camp expects a busy summer. Already in May, and again this was May of this year, its landowners have earned three times as much as they did in May 2019. Another service, TentRR, offers sites on private land with glamping-style furnished tents and outhouses. Sites range from a brewery in the Finger Lakes region of New York, starting from $145, to a farm in Tennessee, which starts at $75. I don't want the average camper who has all the stuff, said Ken Ford, who recently built a TentRR site on family property near Waverton, New York, in the Adirondacks. It cost $150 a night. He says, I want a person who drives up on a motorcycle with nothing, and it's turnkey. Group tours spread out. Hand sanitizer has long been on the buses of group trips. Now those buses will be scrubbed their occupancy reduced, and new routes established as tour companies like Colette and G Adventures reboot post-pandemic, which includes offering generous cancellation policies. Active tour companies like Back Roads think naturally socially distanced forms of travel, such as biking and hiking, lend themselves to current demands. In July, Back Roads plans to resume trips in the United States in places like Sedona, Arizona, and the Florida Keys. The company is taking the temperature of all travelers at the start of a trip, reducing group sizes to an average of about 10 and planning fewer group meals. For some companies that are looking ahead to international travel getting its footing back, the crisis offers an itinerary reset. Geographic Expeditions plans on altering its walking tours to avoid crowded destinations in places like Japan. "It's a challenge," said Don George, who will guide three of the company's trips to Japan, including Kyoto, next spring. "But it's also exciting to think about off-the-beaten-path places that we can visit that will illuminate the spirit and soul of Kyoto." In the future, travelers won't be touring Bangkok by tuk-tuk with G Adventures. In redesigning its trips for the pandemic, the small group tour operator plans to drop elements over which it doesn't have full control, like cleaning tuk-tuks, and work on offering things like assigned seats and vehicles to ensure social distancing and single rooms without a supplemental charge. Pivoting to small groups. By renting cabins, villas, RVs, or houseboats, small groups can practice social distancing in isolation. Families and friends who decide to travel together in the near future will find resorts and services scaling to suit them. When the prospects for event travel fell off the coronavirus cliff, the owners of Cedar Lakes Estate, a 500-acre compound in New York's Hudson Valley that normally relies on weddings and meetings in summer, well, they decided to pivot from catering to large groups to reopening as a resort that offers plenty of social distancing. Now, travelers can rent its 18 cottages, which sleep 2 to 12 people, and enjoy mountain hikes, sports like volleyball and tennis, and swimming in two lakes. Guests order meals to be delivered and arrange activities via a concierge using text or video conferencing, and the rates start at $1,180 a week. In June, the New York City-based travel agency Embark Beyond started Camp Embark, a private camp program based at luxury resorts from Rhode Island to Montana, with a dedicated camp counselor organizing children's activities. Prices range from about $1,200 a night plus $1,000 to $2,000 a week for camp counselors. Adventure International, which specializes in private tours to places like Mount Kilimanjaro, has found that interest in trips in the United States is surging. 6 days at its private glamping site near Yellowstone National Park includes meals, excursions, and a guide. It all started at $2,900 a person this past summer. Now, Roadies, which offers itineraries and top-of-the-line buses modeled after rock star tours, is offering those coaches to private groups of up to 10, spending a week visiting U.S. Open golf courses, ski resorts in the Rockies, or California wineries. Prices for this started around $4,000 a person. More affordable options include private tours offered by the Moab Adventure Center in southern Utah, which runs rafting, mountain biking, and rock climbing trips. Climbing lessons that normally cost $107 a person will cost $595 for up to four people. "We'd always done private tours but never advertised it," said Brandon Lake, co-owner of Moab Adventure Center. "Now we've built out a parallel track for people to make the choice they're most comfortable with." The couple's bubble just got cozier. "We've been doing social distancing for years. It's what we've built our brand on," said Adam Stewart, the deputy chairman of Sandals Resorts, which operates 15 all-inclusive properties in 6 Caribbean countries. "Romance requires privacy," he notes. The resorts, most of which are reopening this summer, again this past summer, 2020, cater to couples with 2-person soaking tubs, hammocks for 2, and private dinners on the beach. When the resorts reopen, their restaurant tables will be spaced further apart. Elevator trips will be limited to 1 couple. 30-passenger buses that transfer guests from the airport will take a maximum of 10. Beach parties with rum drinks and reggae remain, but, added Mr. Stewart, we will not be having the conga line. Restricted to employees and guests only, all-inclusive resorts offer more privacy. With everything being contained to the resort itself, I truly don't have any fears, said Bobby Mergenthaler, a home health care worker in Coutts, Indiana, who booked a week-long trip with her husband in November to celebrate their anniversary at the all-inclusive Secrets Cap Cana Resort and Spa in the Dominican Republic. Resorts consisting of standalone guest quarters from the high-end Bluefields Bay Villas in Jamaica that come with their own chef, and those villas started $980, to the glamping tents at Collective Vale in Colorado, which started $249, and the budget-friendly tiny houses rentals at Canoe Bay Escape Village in Wisconsin. They started $125. They all say they are naturally configured for the COVID-19 travel era. Well, the homes are not near others. You have little to zero contact with other people, and you're in a wilderness setting where you can decompress, said Dan Dobrolowski, the owner of Canoe Bay Escape Village, adding that most summer weekends are sold out. A bubble of one. In May, moderators of the Facebook page Solo Travel Society asked their 260,000 some members, has the pandemic changed your outlook on how you will travel solo going forward? Well, within 3 hours, nearly 200 responses ran the gamut from fear of getting the virus on a flight to impatience with travel restrictions. But most hewed in the resilient direction of Chris Engelman of Ottawa, Illinois, who wrote, traveling makes me happy. I'm going to continue to live a life of joy. People are looking at road trips in your bubble in your car, said Janice Waugh, the founder of the website SoloTravelerWorld.com, who also runs Solo Travel Society on Facebook, where members are also talking about solo camping and self-guided walking and cycling trips. Solo travelers often join tours and companies like Talk, and they've catered to them by dropping single supplements on some trips. But with trips abroad on hold because of border restrictions and group trips a potential health threat, Audley Travel, a custom tour operator, said the private trips it has designed for solos have doubled since mid-March, indicating a shift away from group departures. For summer and fall, Karen Cabot, the founder of Solo Escapes, plans to replace small group trips to places like Morocco with weekend trips in the rural Northeast, where many of her clients can drive until they get comfortable with the safety of air travel. Hiking, boating, and culinary activities may be on the agenda. We'll do socially distanced dinners, she said. It may be a very long dinner table or two tables. We're adjusting. So there you go, how some major travel companies kind of turned the tables, if you will, and did some modifications in order to combat the COVID-19 experience for the summer, and some of those still in effect for this fall, so that might give you some ideas. Well, COVID-19, of course, is not the only thing that has changed travel. One of the biggest changes came in with the introduction of GPS, or the Satellite-Based Global Positioning System. That started in 1973. Once it found its way into the consumer lifestyle, roadmaps and their kin started collecting dust on bookshelves or were simply discarded or ignored. Recently, writer Walter Nicklin found himself sheltering in place thanks to the pandemic. Now, as he wandered about his home, he rediscovered some maps. As the headline reads, Maps New and All Offer Sheltering in Place Globetrotting and Lessons in Human History. Published in the April 30th, 2020 issue of the Washington Post, the editors introduced Nicklin's article, A Circa 1860 Hand-Colored Map of the World, The Maps of a Bygone Era, Can Enrich Our Understanding of the Arc of Human History. Let's see what we can learn. Who needs a map, you might logically ask, when you're not going anywhere? But in a time of social distancing and sheltering in place, maybe maps are needed more than ever. Like magic, they can transport us. And if the raison d'etre of travel is to learn something new, then to ponder maps can turn idle time into lifelong learning. Grabbing my easily distractible attention at this self-isolated moment is a colorful, glossy road map peeking out from my desk clutter. Measuring roughly 18 inches by 24 inches, the printed map encapsulates the antipodal 103,483-square-mile country that required 20 hours of air travel for me to get there. Yes, it's a map of New Zealand. The time I spent there a few months ago wasn't long enough. I had never before been and didn't want to leave, and thus hoped to return one day. That day, much sooner than I ever hoped, suddenly feels like now, thanks to the map. Whether in plotting a future trip or reliving past travels, maps provide serendipitous, safe escape from the coronavirus lurking outside. Ready for an exciting journey? Asked the prominent typeface on the road map's frontispiece. Published by Mode Car and Camper Rentals, the map both led and followed me everywhere, from the rental car's glove compartment into my computer bag, then across the Pacific to where it now sits among domestic clutter. To unfold the accordion-like panels is to be granted the revelatory overview of New Zealand's North Island on one side and the South Island on the other. Major urban centers such as Auckland, Wellington, and Christchurch have their very own maps placed in insets where the Pacific Ocean and Tasman Sea would normally, realistically, lie. The paper is beginning to tear at some of the folds, proof of its frequent use, especially when my hands were still damp from splashing in the breakers off Raglan or capsizing while canoeing on the Tawanganea River. And at that time I spilled a long black in the car, and there's evidence of that, too, in the coffee stains fouling the map's Bay of Plenty. But paper, like Mother Nature herself, is more forgiving than a laptop keyboard or a smartphone, which would have been ruined forever by such a spill. I pick up the road map, unfold it, spread it across the desktop like a tablecloth. Its careful topography and precise lines cover up the disorder underneath the random stacks of disorganized sheets of unrelated papers. It also seems to impose a temporary order on the outside world, now turned upside down by an unseen virus. If something can be mapped, it can be controlled. The semi-gloss, heavyweight paper that the map is printed on feels good to the touch, more down-to-earth than satellite-based GPS. The roadmap's very physicality, unlike fleeting images on MapQuest or Google Maps, seems warmly reassuring in this time of physical distancing when we can't touch others. Sure, I admit to following, passively, unthinkingly, unquestioningly, the commanding voice of my smartphone when, for instance, trying to forge the quickest path from point A, Auckland, to point B, nearby Beachlands. But to be an active participant in the journey, to be an aware traveler and truly understand where I was going, I needed the context of the printed roadmap. Plus, GPS is just too easy, too detailed, leaving little to the imagination. Printed maps, on the other hand, are full of suggestive and mysterious blank spaces waiting to be filled in by your creativity and personal experiences. In contrast, my smartphone's Google app, called Timeline, leaves nothing to the imagination and imposes its own artificial intelligence-generated memories over my own. For my last pre-pandemic travels to Quebec in search of enough snow to cross-country ski, Google Timeline recalls with perfect precision which restaurants I visited, what time I arrived at my Airbnb, its exact address, ad infinitum. But it's all too much detailed information, ignoring the old marketing axiom regarding the powerful emotional mix of reminiscences and anticipation, to sell the sizzle and not the steak. So, instead, I prefer to unfold my well-used street map of old Quebec City, where my mind's eye can see in reawakened soft focus the blizzard-like conditions blurring the groomed trails on the Plains of Abraham. And more, I can savor again the bottle of wine I opened, après-ski in the warm glow of a rustic fireplace, away from Google's prying, all-seeing eye. The real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. That celebrated quote from Marcel Proust's Remembrance of Things Past speaks to the magic of maps. Among my favorites in seeing the world anew are topographical maps available from the U.S. Geological Survey. They are matchless in coming to understand your travel's lay of the land, especially when planning or reflecting upon outdoor activities. The map's contour lines let you, the hiker, know how steep and strenuous a trek may be, or, as a whitewater canoeist and kayaker, how rapid a river's descent. Since cartography's earliest beginnings, huge blank spaces, terra incognita and mare incognitum, seduced adventurous travelers. Like theater, maps entertained, as evidenced by the title of the first attempt at a world atlas circa 1570, Theatrum Orbis Terrarum, Theater of the Orb of the World. Included in this atlas was the forerunner of my New Zealand road map, the hypothesized lands of the Southern Hemisphere, Terra Australis Incognita, unknown land of the South. Even earlier world maps in the Middle Ages, known as the Mappa Mundi, make the point that maps are always mirrors that reflect zeitgeist, and thus are portals to the past. Medieval mapmakers were less interested in producing accurate navigational guides than in making the world conform to the harmonious order of God's creation. Symmetry and perfect spheres took precedence over the irregularity of mountains and twisting paths of rivers. Dissected maps were some of the earliest jigsaw puzzles in the 1700s, making geography fun for children. Originally cut from oak or mahogany, today's cardboard versions are still popular, especially with adults keeping their minds active while stuck indoors. The 1,000-piece jigsaw of a 17th-century world map by Henricus Andeas, for instance, recently kept my self-isolated neighbors busy for days. They then swapped for other jigsaws with this understanding: disinfect and leave yours on the porch, and I will take yours and disinfect and leave mine. Years ago, I started collecting antique maps, especially ones of my native Virginia. Though now matted, framed under glass, and hanging motionless on a wall inside a house, they're a traveler's delight, transporting you not only over miles and miles, but centuries as well. To linger over Captain John Smith's 1607-1608 map of the Chesapeake, for instance, is to put you in his boat as he sailed up the Potomac, looking for a waterway to the Western Ocean, as if seeing the places he records for the first time. His names for now familiar places endure. Naming, and through revisionist history, renaming places, illustrate the power of mapmakers. Their handiwork might be what we today call branding, for the story of a place can usually be found in its name. And if you could name a place, you controlled it. So it was that Explorer Smith memorialized the land he mapped as Virginia after the Virgin Queen Elizabeth, though he also recorded for posterity over 100 Native American place names still in use today. There's even a name for the study of place names, toponymy. And so while gazing at my New Zealand road map, can it be said that I'm now engaged in a toponymistic search, or call it mental peregrination, as I find myself hiking again up the rocky path of a small spherical mountain, rising where the Toynga Harbor meets the sea. Oddly out of place, this lone mountain is an extinct volcano called Mauao. What's in a name? Well, the origins lie in a Maori tale of unrequited love. The small, at the time nameless mountain, deeply desired a neighboring beautifully wooded hill, but her heart had already been taken by a higher, more prestigious mountain. So sadly, the nameless mountain decided to drown itself in the ocean. His friends, the forest fairy people, who came out only at night, fastened him with lots of ropes to pull him to his death. They pulled all night, and so created the valley seen today near the Toynga. But before they could get to the ocean, the sun rose, forcing the fairy people to retreat into the forest's dark depths. Thus the mountain now stands where it does today, just touching the ocean, no longer nameless, but called Morrow, meaning caught by dawn. Three-dimensional space may be the subject matter of maps, but time is ultimately what they're all about. The time of history and geological prehistory, of course, but also your own time as a traveler, plotting ahead or endlessly revisiting. Even beyond the past and future, each map contains an alternative universe of endless contingency and infinite possibility, of roads not taken and unvisited places. What if? Writer Walter Nicklin is based in Virginia, and you can find him on Twitter at RoadTripRedo. That's at RoadTrip, R-E-D-U-X, RoadTripRedo. Our final stop on today's Armchair Traveler is going to be in Florida. In the September-October 2020 issue of AAA Go magazine, we came across this article, St. Augustine, a Timeless Favorite. written by Aaron Gifford. In the beginning, St. Augustine is rich in history and old world charm thanks largely to famed Spanish explorer Juan Ponce de Leon. He came ashore in 1513 during his search of Bimini in the Bahamas. This fated landing led to the founding of historic St. Augustine, the country's oldest continuously inhabited city. Old City History. Begin your stay by soaking in nearly five centuries of history with a guide-narrated sightseeing tour with Old Town Trolley Tours. This open-air tram tour is a relaxing way to spend a morning and firm up what we do next as you navigate the Spanish colonial architectural-style buildings across the 144-block historic district. The cobblestone streets in the Old City are lined with quaint boutiques, art galleries, and historic buildings. The pedestrian-only walkway on St. George Street affords visitors a laid-back stroll that's refreshingly free of car or bicycle traffic. The famed Castillo de San Marcos dominates the northeast corner of the Old City. It's the oldest masonry fortress in the continental United States. In the evening, spine-tingling ghost tours dramatically bring to light the darker side of St. Augustine. The old jail, for one, is widely considered one of the most haunted buildings in town. Paranormal investigators from Travel Channel's Kindred Spirits recently dedicated a full episode to it. Beach time. More than 42 miles of beautiful beaches make St. Augustine a paradise for sunseekers. Crescent Beach is an idyllic stretch of coastline that lends itself to bike rides thanks to hard-packed sand. The sun-spoiled coastal section sees fewer crowds than celebrated St. Augustine Beach, making it a popular destination for beachcombers in search of the perfect shells. The white quartz sand is the siren's call of the beaches at Anastasia State Park. This pristine coastline beckons visitors to explore its 1,600 coastal acres. Bike along the 4 miles of sandy beaches and park roads, or bring a set of binoculars to observe such bird species as wood storks or roseate spoonbills. There's also family favorites. Enjoy an afternoon at Ponce de Leon's Fountain of Youth Archaeological Park, sample the restorative water from inside the spring house, then wander the grounds in search of colorful peacocks that roam the 15-acre property. The St. Augustine Alligator Farm Zoological Park is home to plenty of alligators as well as all 24 species of crocodiles. Daily wildlife shows introduce guests to exotic birds, reptiles, and other animals. Thrilling treetop zip lines and ropes courses send guests mere feet over live alligators. Well, don't miss the St. Augustine Lighthouse and Maritime Museum. You climb 219 steps to the top of the lighthouse for sweeping views across the Matanzas Bay and the Atlantic Ocean. Peek in the keeper's house next door for an insider's look into daily life at an active light station. Well, my friends, that's going to bring us to the end of today's episode of Armchair Traveler. Be sure to listen next time. Hope you've enjoyed your journey today. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.